Hey everyone, welcome to episode 57 of Forever Strength. I'm Andrew Coates, and I am turning the tables on Bailey today, and Bailey is the guest. So I will be asking the questions, and you guys will actually get to learn a little bit more about Bailey's history experience. Bailey, it is wonderful to have you on today. Thank you for taking the time to join me.
Yes, of course. Every Tuesday.
Almost every Tuesday, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So for those of you guys who don't know, Bailey has a Bachelor of Kinesiology. She's a trainer and online coach, and obviously my partner in Forever Strength. And you competed for quite a long time in pretty high-level soccer. And is there anything else that's really important that you want to share about your experience? Because you've been a trainer, I keep mixing this one up, by 4 years now. That's what I thought. Good. So it's been a pretty good 4 years.
Yeah, just to clarify, not high-level soccer, university level. It's different, I promise.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, and that makes sense because as an outsider, I would think of university level as very high level, but I'm guessing high level has its own technical differentiation between university level. So university level sounds that much better, right? So as you like to always start our guests with, I would love to learn how you started in strength training.
Yeah, and I will give as much detail as possible because I like when our guests give lots of detail. When I was young, my mom put me in a lot of sports. Dancing, I did karate. Soccer, volleyball, basketball, like all the main sports as well. Anything that didn't overlap too much. And then I got to a point in high school where it was too much. She made me choose, you know, two sports, and that kept me busy enough throughout the whole year, her as well, because she was usually the one driving me there and back. So I picked soccer and volleyball. Those are the ones I kind of excelled at. Obviously, that's why I chose them. And she took me to fitness classes. I don't know if anyone has heard of Kango jumps. It's like a moon boot class where like you jump the whole time. It was pretty intense cardio, even for someone that played an endurance sport like soccer. It was pretty fun. So she started taking me to those classes when I was 15, I think. Regular, I don't know, I quote mom classes like Zumba and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not a good dancer, so it was a good sort of coordination practice for me too. I didn't start lifting weights though until I got into university, because I was being forced to train, which sounds, you know, as an athlete, you need to do it. Like it has to be done, right? If you want to be good at your sport, you can't just practice your sport. You need to be you need to have good agility, you need to have good endurance, you need to be strong, all that kind of stuff. If anyone's heard of Augustana, it's a branch off of the University of Alberta. It's located in Camrose. Got into school there in my bachelor's, and then sort of accidentally went to one of their tryout practice things. So I wasn't recruited or anything. I just happened to go to one of their practices. they put me on the team, obviously. I was a starter for the whole 4 years that I played there, but they sort of moved me around the field. I was kind of a utility player, right? So it was in my, I think it was in my second year, because of course they do fitness testing, right? And that plays a role in whether or not you're a starter, because obviously you need to be fit enough to play 90 minutes, because in university level, in the ACAC, you only get 5 substitutions per game. So of course they want most players to be able to play the whole game. So I was kind of a cardio freak for the first 2 years. And then once our trainer started putting more weightlifting into our program for off season, I realized how much it actually helped, in terms of like not being able to, for people to easily push me off the ball, having more strength to hold myself on the field against these other women. And some of them were very, very strong for sure. And of course, being only 18, 19 years old, I was still quite small and petite. Strength training definitely made a huge difference to my game. And then, after I got really into strength training, where it was kind of the only thing I do, cardio fell to the wayside aside from preseason when I really had to get my cardio up in order to get into the season. And then I went after I graduated my Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology, I went to work as a physio aide, which I did not like. It was not fun for me. It was kind of the dynamic was the physios get you to do whatever they didn't want to do. That was just the dynamic in that clinic that I worked in. So it wasn't very fun. I wasn't getting any fulfillment out of it. I didn't feel like I was being compensated considering I had a bachelor's, you know, that time, that old tale of, you know, they're not paying me enough for what they're making me do. So I started looking for jobs, just whatever would take a Kines degree. And so I kind of fell into personal training. It wasn't what I was planning on doing. Right, because I wanted to be a kinesiologist, which a lot of people don't know what that means. It's just the study of the movement of the body. So kinesiologists are usually sort of between physiotherapists and personal trainers, where they're working with people through rehab programs, but they're not a physiotherapist, if that makes sense. Yep. So yeah, and then I was already seriously lifting. And then, of course, my background in kinesiology, I started off as quite a timid trainer. I have some clients that I've been training since I started 4.25 years ago, and they would attest to that. Like, I was very shy and quiet. They were always asking me, sorry, what did you say? Because I wasn't loud enough for them to hear me in a loud gym, right? So I started at a women's only gym, and I worked there for 2 years. I ended up switching over after the gym that I was working at was heading toward bankruptcy. I didn't feel confident in having a job there when everything went down. And they didn't really give me much confidence there anyway. So I thought, what's the difference between feeling
secure?
Secure, yeah. Secure in my job. What's the difference between the company I'm working for going towards bankruptcy and running my own company? Mm-hmm. So that was after I already started training with you in person. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, Evolve was definitely a good switch for me. And yeah, I don't know, never look back. I love running my own company. It's definitely more beneficial. Not to say that I didn't learn anything from the first 2 years that I worked there. Like I said, I started off really timid, and most people don't want to work with a trainer that's humming and hawing about, oh, maybe we should do this, right? Like, you have to be confident in the job. So definitely helps there.
How much has it helped your ability to train your clients, or even had clients confident in your ability to train them, seeing how strong you are? Because for anybody who is not watching any of your media, they could go to your media and realize pretty quickly that you are extremely strong.
Yeah, it's definitely made a difference, even in the what I expect from my clients. You know what I mean? You see the regular numbers that an average person can lift, and sometimes as a trainer, you're watching them and they don't feel confident about lifting more. But now that I know that I can lift so much more, I think, well, you know, why can't they? So it did get me to push them that little bit more, because, you know, I saw it in myself where I didn't think I could lift that much, and then I proved myself wrong. So, you know, it goes for them too, for sure.
Makes a lot of sense. The expectations that we place upon them, because a lot of this stuff becomes very self-limiting, right? If you have a boundary around what you think you can do, it makes sense that your clients would, and vice versa. How much has the environment of a resistance, you know, an athletic training facility that has a lot of strength athletes in it, has that changed, you know, your clients' experience, where they look around and go, oh shit, like, this environment, I'm seeing all these people doing all this crazy stuff. Has it helped break their limiting beliefs as well?
Oh, definitely. I saw a post the other day that said, if you're the strongest person in your gym, you need a new gym. I don't remember who it was, but I thought, oh man, that is totally true. Because when I worked at that women's only gym, there were limiting weights there, that's for sure. A third of the gym was cardio machines. So that's sort of what it was geared towards. And I was sort of an outlier as a trainer too, because most of the other female trainers there were doing like circuity type stuff. And I had one trainer ask me once, you write down what your clients do for weights? And I said, yes. And she said, oh. And I said, you don't do that? How are you going to track how much they've been lifting and if they're progressing? And she said, well, I don't know. We just kind of go with how they feel that day. So it was a different dynamic. So having a gym where it's a lifting gym, like you can tell when you walk in, it definitely changed the way that my clients thought about going to the gym in general. And I do have very strong clients. And sometimes they forget how strong they are because they are surrounded by people that are lifting like ridiculous weights.
I'm trying to think about something else here now too. There's a question I had and it slipped my mind for a second. I'll come back to it. I can get back there. So what are some of the most important principles that you try to bring to the training sessions with your clients? And maybe also the coaching and the relationship side of things as well. There's the technical training, but there's also the experience that you create.
Yeah. With the technical training, I would say, you know, the normal things that are important, making sure they're on a program, tracking their weights, how much they're lifting, stuff like that, making sure that they're consistent. It is easy, especially as an in-person trainer, to have clients come in once per week, and that's good enough, which I'm not saying that it isn't, but you need to build a program for them that then makes sense for that. I worked with a trainer that was a bodybuilding type, and she thought it was weird that I did full body days with my clients, but they were only coming in 2-3 times a week. And I'm like, why would I waste a whole 60-minute session on, you know, buys and tries or something when they're only coming in twice this week? So yeah, it needs to be geared towards the client, how often they're coming in, what their commitment level is. And then for, I can't remember what you said the other thing, but the experience, I guess.
The relationship side, because I see from the outside, right? And I can speak to a little bit after the fact, but I want to hear a bit like just your either philosophies or what comes naturally, and maybe what comes naturally may influence the type of client that chooses to want to work with you when mm-hmm. it comes to like the interpersonal stuff. And what kind of an effect does the relationship have on the results?
Oh, huge. If they don't want to hang out with you for an hour, they don't want to come to the gym, they're not going to show up. And even if they do, they're not going to be happy being there. So you need to create an environment where they want to show up to the gym. Even if they're not looking forward to the actual lifting part, they're looking forward to that environment that you've created for them that's supportive. You get that connection with them. I don't understand the trainers that, you know, they don't talk to their clients. I think that's so weird. We go into some interesting conversation topics. I'll just say that. And I do have a few clients. I'd say at least half of my clients train at least twice per week with me. So, I mean, I'm seeing them, some of them, more often than they see their family. So yes, it is about the lifting. That's the whole reason they hire you, but you need to create an environment where they feel supported, not judged, feel that connection with you, and even have someone just to talk to about things. You don't have to pretend you're their therapist or anything, but they need to be heard, right? Because there's also that thing where the trainer does the talking the whole time, and sometimes I'll witness that, and the client is just sort of going through their exercises and stuff. But it goes both ways, right?
And it's probably why I assumed when you were describing the experience as a physiotherapy assistant, oftentimes these clinics, the people don't want to be there and therefore they're not choosing to be there. They're rehabilitating injuries, whether it's maybe it's a car accident or something else that's going on. And they're just reluctantly doing it. And therefore they're not the type of people who are showing up because they want to be there and there's a relationship. So I'm guessing on your end, it wasn't very fulfilling either.
No, definitely not. And I wasn't the one directly helping them anyway. Mm. At least this way, you know, I'm the one helping them realize their potential. And And there's so many other things that come out of it too, with lifting weights. They didn't even realize what happened. You know, they obviously get to move better, but they feel better. They're more confident, especially women of all ages that start lifting, start realizing what they can do. And that's the best part, is watching them feel comfortable with themselves.
Have you noticed with some of the women that you work with, they come in with certain limiting beliefs, and has the gym experience changed or even just completely shattered any of those beliefs?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, usually they say, oh, I don't even want to bother with chin-ups or, you know, something like that. That is a very challenging exercise. It takes a lot of work to be able to get to body weight chin-up. So something like that. And then we start practicing it. They get better at it inevitably with consistency. And even if they still can't do a chin-up after a certain amount of time, they're amazed that they're that much closer than they were before.
It's actually fun to watch the women in our Forever Strength group, some of whom had not been able to do chin-ups, and all of a sudden they're now doing reps. It was really fun and rewarding when we were training to have you go from, you know, you were close, but weren't able to get there at that particular time, doing things like the negatives and the holds and what have you. And then the first rep where the one shoulder jumps up a little bit, and now all of a sudden, like, you know, you're banging out reps on your media all the time. So that's super rewarding, is to give gifts like that. Do you feel it's empowering? Like, the whole experience can really unlock just a sense of control, empowerment in other areas of a woman's life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I started training, I was kind of, you know, walking around the gym, trying not to take up space. You know, the typical, oh, I'll just stay on this one bench and use the dumbbells. Or even the people that stick to the cardio machines for months before they feel comfortable moving over to the weights. Yeah, and it made a huge difference. Now in a busy gym, I'll just walk in. So the gym I go to in my hometown, because I don't know if most people know this, but I don't actually live in Edmonton. I just train there. There's a lot of juice monkeys there. There's a lot of gym bros, and a lot of people, because it's a smaller gym, they don't feel comfortable being there, but I really couldn't care less. I know that I know what I'm doing. I'm very confident in what I'm doing. So the worry of people watching me has subsided. I mean, of course, it's always sometimes still there. You know, specifically when you try to figure out a new machine or something, or a new exercise. But yeah, definitely more confident in what I'm doing, for sure. So, and I watch it in my clients too, which is amazing.
Well, those guys are probably look over, see you bang out a set of chin-ups, and they're like, nope, she's good. I'm not going to mess around with her.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they see your video of your farmer's carries and go, oh shit, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Larry always talks about how strong you are at those, especially, like, he knows that he was never able to do the weight that you were able to do on farmer's carries. That was something that he aspires to do someday.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he'll get there. I know there's those little bumps in the road.
Yeah. Like a cardiac event that we had to, he had to take a little bit of a break from. So for those listening, my client Larry, and his philosophy is, he bounced back very well, and his doctors are actually really impressed, and they do credit the fact that he has been resistance training for a few years. And Larry himself figures that this thing would have killed him if he wasn't doing it. You never know. But he's actually been doing extraordinarily well. And of course, we're being smart about it. We're staying within guidelines, and we're definitely not living on the red line of what he can actually do. But Larry's another good example of just how important the relationship is, because if he didn't enjoy us talking and our relationship, he probably wouldn't want to come back. There gets to be a limit of just how much coaching and cueing you're going to do. Our clients who train with us a lot, they get just very good at it. And if they keep coming back, they're valuing something else in the relationship, like the relationship itself, the experience, the accountability. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with becoming really good friends with some of your clients over time. Some of the closest people in my world. I'm going to a wedding this summer. My friend Dustin, he started out as a client first about a decade ago.
Nice. So
that stuff's okay. Yeah.
It's really fun to create those connections, for sure.
Absolutely. So does the way you enjoy training influence the way that you train your own clients? And, or do you find that the way you prefer to train has people self-select to train with you because that's what they're interested in?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the inquiries for personal training comes from Instagram now. So I'm sure they see what I'm doing and they're like, "Oh, she can do that. Maybe she can teach me how to do that." So I would say, yeah, it does affect how I'm training my clients as well. Just because, a lot of the times I've gone through what they're trying to get through. But yeah, there are other things like, watching my client squat these days is kind of sad because I'm not there right now. But it doesn't stop me from pushing them. And my training has changed a little bit more because of the rehab that I've been going through. So definitely.
And I mean, you and I obviously have a bias. We think it's for sure it's an evidence-based bias of the overwhelming benefits of, strength training, resistance training as a foundation for all the other things. That doesn't mean that some of our clients don't have, cardiac health, conditioning goals, playing sports or whatever else. Those can be dimensions, but you and I don't default to random circuit training that just entertains people with a different thing every single day. That I don't like criticizing other trainers, but I think trainers can fall into the trap of thinking that, well, I need to do something different and random and creative every single day so that way my client always needs me. Where I would rather focus on the client feeling very confident and independent, but self-selecting to want to continue because they see other value in the experience. So with that bias that you and I understand the powers and benefits of strength training, I think we feel very confident in doing that. And that's why we're influenced by our background. But and it's interesting to know that you're seeing more and more inquiries through social media now. Have you had women who've come to you recently or maybe more in the past where they started out with a goal that they wanted to lose weight? And how did you navigate that early to transform them into what, again, you and I both probably believe is a good basis of resistance training, might be the best foundation for staying lean longer if their goal is intentional fat loss?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you start with is making sure that they're understood, making sure that they know that you know what they're asking of you, so that there's that understanding there, making them feel heard. So you don't want to bombard them with all this information. Well, science shows this, and you would be better off that way because obviously they came to you because they want to change. And then the knowledge that you're giving them throughout the whole process, it's not even that I'm trying to change their mind. It's just that the changes that they're seeing with strength training, sort of just changes their mind for them. They realize how much better they feel, how much stronger they feel, how confident they feel. So it's not that some of them still have sort of that weight loss thing in the back of their mind, fat loss specifically. That's not usually how they ask for it, but it's not to say that they can't both be done at the same time, right? But yeah, I would say even the strength training, like it all sort of creates a mind shift, a mindset shift, about a more focus on their capabilities, how functional they are, longevity, as opposed to how they look at their body. It's more about how they feel about their body. So yeah, I guess starting off with making sure that they feel understood, educating them, putting them through the process of lifting weights, and then making sure that they understand fat loss comes from nutrition. So that's sort of another thing that they have to add in there when they're ready, if that's still their focus.
Do you think gaining an appreciation for being strong is actually really important to getting them off of the diet cycle?
Yeah, definitely. Feeling strong, it's a fun feeling. And I'm sure most of the listeners know that feeling, right? It's different than watching the scale go down, because then you feel, oh, cool. But when you add 5 pounds to your deadlift, or even smaller, like when you get really into lifting, a 1 pound difference is, you know, it's a PR and it counts and it's just as exciting. But it's so much more fun to tell people, you know, I lift this much. Or every time I hit a PR, because I do record a lot of my workouts for social media, I send it to my husband. I'm like, look, Julian, you know, PR, one more rep or whatever. And yeah, he's just as excited as I am, or at least pretends to be anyway.
How does he feel about the fact that you outlift him on some things?
He's just happy. You know, he's never been competitive with me. We're both quite competitive people, obviously, with athletic backgrounds. But he's never, it's never been a driver for him. He wants to do better for himself. I want to do better for myself. It's been a separate thing since the beginning.
And you've never held yourself back because of that. Do you think some women may hold themselves back to not stand out, to not take up space in whatever capacity, whether it's something where they have an unsupportive partner who doesn't want them to, quote, get more attractive for fear they might leave them? I've definitely dealt with clients who've had this sort of thing, or a partner who's directly interfered with the training process. So any experience with that or navigating that? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, navigating that isn't really the job of a personal trainer. Again, we can provide support, provide a listening ear, but that stuff kind of comes down to them and their relationship, and, you know, therapy if that's necessary or if it's wanted even. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that I've had any specific issues with women wanting to scale back, because even if that was the case, some of the time their husbands aren't active to begin with, so, you know, they're doing it for them and they don't, it's not that they don't care what their husbands think, it's just it's not a driver for them. And usually if it is up to the husband, it's a you need to lose weight comment, and that one's tough to get around. See Ozzy there.
Ozzy's tail, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, eventually, once again, they come around to a mindset shift where they then care about more what they're doing and how functional and how good they feel about themselves, that that's something that they need to deal with outside of the gym if they have stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. I've never listened to a client say anything like, oh, my husband lifts less than me. Maybe can we do more volume or something? Or he said something about, you know, my delts are looking too big. Can we scale back? I've never listened. I've never heard anything like that from my clients.
That's good.
So it could be also that, yeah, the women that self-select to train with me, they aren't like that.
There's probably that last thing probably plays in as well, because you wonder if people do feel that way and then they therefore avoid, you know, even pursuing it or approaching it. So it's probably just a bigger conversation about making those people feel safe to do it for themselves. But you're right, it's complicated. So don't think I have a clear answer either. I have had situations, it's rare. I can think of one very old situation where I had a client and it was very obvious that the partner was insecure about the client getting in shape, what have you. And the partner very aggressively ran interference on our training sessions, tried to take over the scheduling, made sure that he had errands last minute anytime that we had scheduling. And unfortunately, I did have to have a tough conversation about it with him just to say, like, you know, this is what's going on. I mean, obviously it was very much affecting my business and his ability to do it. And it came from a place of empathy, but it also came from a place of, okay, this is what's going on. And, you know, I've never had a negative, you know, it didn't seem like it was a negative outcome. There's no hard feelings, but also it did ultimately, by the client's choice, ultimately the client just decided not to continue, which was a tough thing to have to do. But unfortunately in that situation, it was still a better outcome for me to free up the spot than to continuously have this client canceling all the time, which wasn't serving them. So sometimes you don't get the outcome you want. And I wouldn't have been doing this client any favors by pretending this wasn't the situation either. So anyway, interesting story. How do you want to inspire more women to try strength training for the first time if they are of the mindset that, again, they have to lose weight, or that they think that they should be doing cardio, or that they are intimidated by a gym?
I mean, the lead by example always comes to mind. I love lifting weights, going to continue to lift weights. Even after my ACL reconstructive surgery, it's going to be a bit limited, but I'm still going to keep going. Knowing that I have to sort of not start from scratch, of course, the connection between the brain and the muscles is still there, blah, blah, blah. But starting to do body weight squats, not be able to bar, like that's so I think even going through this is going to allow me to better understand the beginner all over again, because I mean, with my knee and having to, like I said, sort of start over, it is kind of the same thing, you know, aside from having that gym phobia. Well, what's that phrase people say? But they're like scared of going to the gym. Ugh, anyway, it's aside from that, I guess, as being a beginner, I'm not going to be uncomfortable doing my exercises or anything like that. But the being excited about adding or being able to get under a bar again, just like a beginner would, I think that'll definitely hopefully inspire some more people. So I'm definitely going to be posting about it. On Instagram.
I find I did an episode of the other podcast with my friend Aram, and we talked about how we had both experienced things were a little slower relative to our usual this summer, and how a lot of the other coaches I've talked to, it's been a little slower. And I got this massive outpouring of listeners who were like, oh my God, like, you know, things have been slow for me. And there's this fear that it's just you as the coach or the person who's going through this, you're very alone. And everybody else is putting on this big show of how successful they are and everything's great, when in fact, our industry as a whole is actually sort of, there's a little bit of a lull. It's summertime, that's normal. Mm-hmm. But if you are showing your personal experience with going through this surgery and the rehabilitation and being this person with an identity as being a really strong woman who has to restart in some elements, there are probably going to be people looking at that going, hey, that's me, that's my experience. So I kind of hope what'll end up happening is more people reach out to you, and you may actually have people want to train with you specifically to go through this. I currently have a client. We've been together now, God, 5-6 weeks. But when she started, she was 6 weeks post knee replacement, or maybe I got the math wrong on that. Maybe it was longer. There's a piece of information that I'm forgetting. I apologize. But anyway, she's been doing great with her rehabilitation, but one of the most rewarding things is to work with people to give them back the capacity to do things that they used to be able to do. Yeah. So what do you have planned? I mean, we had your coach, Haley Berrigan, on last episode, and Haley's obviously with you, and then a physical therapist that a couple of my clients work with, and you have Brendan, who's amazing, and he's specialized. He's brilliant when it comes to ACLs and knees. So you have a really good foundation, but how do you plan to approach your rehab?
Well, from what he's told me, he's very, like you said, he's very smart with this area. It is his specialty. Start to learn how to walk again, increasing range of motion as much as I can with all of the really fun, really boring exercises that he's going to give me. I'm still going to be doing the most that I can with upper body. I know that the limited range of motion to start with after the surgery is going to affect some of the exercises that I can do, but even just modifying them. So either I can keep my legs straight or I don't have to use leg drive, like stuff like that. But yeah, so getting back full range of motion, then we can start adding weight to exercises, putting weights through the range of motion. And then I think comes... after load bearing, hopping, things like that, where it's slowing down. And then, yeah, hopping, running, changing direction. I think, gosh, that's not till month six or something ridiculous. So sort of agility stuff there. And then after that comes sports specific, which I think is month eight or something. So I won't be able to get back into soccer, which is the whole reason I'm doing this surgery, because honestly, right now, my knee is fine. There's nothing stopping me from doing much, except for, obviously, I will sustain another injury if I try to play soccer, just because it's so much changing direction, twisting, jumping, kicking, stuff like that. So I'll be able to get to that until, I think it's 9 to 12. But he's really smart with this kind of stuff. So he has really good markers, not just times, right? So even I could be ahead of the, because I have a longer training age. I've been lifting weights for 7 years. It could be faster, it could be slower. Like, it all depends on the work that I put in.
Strong hamstrings in particular are a very, like, it's one of the reasons why you couldn't walk around and function for the rest of your life without an ACL in your knee outside of playing soccer, right? It's nice to be able to do that. Yeah. But a lot of the problems that some people end up with is they have, you know, they don't have much strength in the muscles around their knee anyway, and then they go blow out their knee on top of it, which probably leads them more likely to probably suffer a, you know, cartilage or a meniscus tear, maybe other ligaments as well. But the fact that you have so much strength and muscle around your knee is why you've been minimally affected. And
yeah,
did you even know you had torn your ACL initially?
Funny story. I was in denial for at least 4 days after he told me. I already had an appointment with Brendan the Thursday, so I got hurt the Monday. It felt like this woman had kicked me, and then my knee hyperextended and then collapsed in. And so, you know, I couldn't get up. Sat there for a while, felt like forever. The first step I tried to take, my knee gave out. So, you know, they helped me walk to the bench. 2 minutes later, I was doing body weight squats. It felt fine. The only thing it would give out is when I was trying to twist. Walked out of the game. I didn't play the rest of the game, obviously, because I was like, ooh, better not, like, just in case. I'm not a young teenager anymore that's willing to risk stuff like that. And then, yeah, drove home. Felt fine. I was sort of limping for the next 2 weeks, I guess. But only because I couldn't quite straighten my knee the whole way. So I saw Brendan that Thursday. He's like, you know, keep going back and forth with it. I'm not sure if most people know that the test that they do to see your ACL, but they sort of manipulate your knee to see if there's an end range, an end point to the bones when they're moving them. He went back and forth, oh my goodness, 10 times trying to see. And then so he said, yeah, I think you tore your ACL. And I was like, no. There was no pain. I didn't hear any popping noise. The only thing that happened is that my knee gave out, and then I can't quite strengthen, or I can't quite straighten it the whole way. I was like, there's no way. So there was no pain pretty well the whole time since I've torn my ACL, which I do attribute a lot of that to having strength trained and having that musculature to support that joint. But yeah, so that was annoying. I am very grateful that there's no pain, anything with that. And then I was able to just stay completely functional the whole time. Like, we went to Vegas that Monday. So a week later, and I was walking 20,000 steps every day. Excuse me. And then we went to that conference too, and I was completely fine. Mm-hmm. So it was good, but I was also like, seriously? Like, why?
It's testament to how resilient the body really is. And I think people often think about structure in the body as these very individualized structures that don't have a relationship with other structures. Now, an ACL still is a very finite thing. And there's, you know, there's issues if you rupture it. But I mean, I have an undiagnosed but moderate shoulder injury that I've been dealing with for a few years and don't know exactly what it is. Could be a partial labral tear, could be a rotator cuff partial tear, could be a fully ruptured tendon, who knows. But I'm still able to do a lot of stuff. But there's a lot of these structures actually, like, very much are like interwoven with each other versus very, very distinct from each other. So we have a lot of people walking around in society with rotator cuff tears that they don't know. They're totally asymptomatic. They've lost no range of motion. There's no pain. And then sometimes we have pain in the absence of a fairly major structural injury, where someone has so sensitized to pain that they just simply can't do things because they've trained themselves to expect pain. So there's some goofy relationships here. But either way, mm-hmm. I think underlying it all is to try to stay as strong as possible is valuable. So,
It's definitely going to help with obviously the initial injury that I stayed so functional for so long, but it's definitely going to help all the work that I put in now after surgery is going to be so much easier.
Well, that was awesome. And I'm actually really glad we got into the current state of your injury too, because if anybody's dealing with something like that, you know, we are not invulnerable. I am currently dealing with an unknown, I have to go get this looked at. There's definitely some sort of like nerve cervical issue that is led to an injury in my arm. And now I'm starting to feel it down the other side. So, you know, I've gone from feeling very invulnerable to all of a sudden feeling like I'm not able to do all the things I enjoy. So I have to go look at that. So that is something that can happen. So obviously having good rehabilitation professionals in your corner is going to go a long way. I hope everybody listening by now is following you, but let's remind them.
At Bailey Lau Fit on Instagram.
Lau is spelled L-A-U, right?
Yes.
I don't know if we joked about this before, but when you first reached out to me through social media, you had asked to sit down and talk about training. You're looking for a trainer and a mentor. And so anyway, the first day to go to greet you at the front of Evolve, I actually was expecting an Asian woman. I really was, the surname Lau. But then, nope. So anyway, so it's actually your husband's surname, and he is some German background. But anyways, yes. I was surprised for a moment and then didn't think about it again, but I just thought it was a funny thing. So hopefully people will go and follow you on your social media and see all your strength exploits. And obviously you're going to be documenting your rehab through the entire process too.
Yep, I am. Super fun.
All right. Thanks for everybody tuning in again. We'll be back hopefully next week if we have a guest, or we'll have a solo episode. But I hope you enjoyed this. It was nice to peel back the curtain and learn more about Bailey's history too. So thanks, everybody.